just call me an arse.
I try to, but arse autocorrects to star. in American, apparently. So it looked like I was just calling you a star for being woefully late.
It says star arse. I was just like, what?
There's some deep meaning there.
So much deep meaning.
It did that, and then I just was like, because when I text, like, I'm the worst at, like, text mess-ups, because I just don't care a lot, and so I just text it really fast. But I sound, I'm like one of those wacky moms that, like, talk text sometimes.
Yes.
It's just like, what?
It's just, you know what, you and my friend Jamie is also really bad at it, and I've gotten pretty good at translating.
Yeah.
But one time Jamie texted me, Portugal tonight. And I said, I was like, I would love to go to Portugal tonight, but it feels a little last minute.
I typically leave out words, and then if something autocorrects it, I don't read it back again. So I just like leave it. Yeah. Those are my two big sort of things. So sometimes it'll just read like, like I'm the Zodiac killer or something.
It's a puzzle. You have to puzzle through.
Look, I want you guys to have to think when you talk to me. And not in the intellectual way.
You got to work for it.
Just ciphering my language. Hey, guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks.
Hey, welcome to Theology on the Rocks. How are y'all doing?
Are y'all into NFL yet now that Taylor Swift's a part of
it? Yeah, how many new NFL fans do you need Leah and I to explain football to you? We can have...
I love all the TikToks that are like, I watch TikToks while I run and whenever Christy sends them to me. And so, but everyone's like, these are all, it's just like a bunch of like misogynistic sort of like, my wife now cares about football because of Taylor Swift. And I wanted to be like, correction. Me as a wife cares about professional football now because of Taylor Swift. I already knew about football. And in fact, I taught a Scottish man about football too. Yep. So,
you know what's funny? My oldest niece is only 4 years younger than me because of a very large gap between my siblings and I. But she keeps sending me those same TikToks about like people care about football now because of Taylor Swift, but in particular because it's Kansas City. And again, our family, I don't know if you guys heard about this, but we're big Denver Bronco fans.
And don't talk about the game.
And so we hate Kansas City. And so she keeps sending me these things.
Why, like, do you hate I'm Kansas send City? These,
the it's, Broncos, if they're, oh, they're okay. One of our rivals.
Oh, okay. Okay. You just have to say Alabama and I would understand.
Yeah, same. It's like Alabama.
But is it that your number one hate?
No, that's the Raiders. Now the Las Vegas Raiders, but always and forever the Oakland Raiders.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah. But she keeps sending me them and saying things like, I'm going to send this to my dad and watch his head explode. And I'm like, Lauren, my head is exploding. I don't want you rooting for the Chiefs more than your dad doesn't want you rooting for the Chiefs.
Stuart sent me a link that said that it may not have been his, actually, I think it was his jersey, but it was some sort of their paraphernalia or whatever. Paraphernalia makes it sound like drugs. Their merch. Their bongs, but their merchandise went up 400%.
Yes, it is his jersey. 400%. I mean, look, I understand that, like, globally, Taylor Swift is obviously the more famous person. And I also realize that she has kind of intense fans.
Yeah, keep going. But
I do feel like we need to acknowledge that it wasn't like he was a nobody before.
I had no clue who that man was. You
well,
could have
put him. Know. You don't care about the NFL.
I'm well, no, like... but Stuart was even like, he was on SNL. He hosted SNL.
He was.
And he had a reality show.
He did.
A dating reality show. Again,
yeah.
Those are spheres that I do circle in. And I still had no idea who that guy was.
Like, he's an incredibly well-known NFL player. I understand that this is like a different kind of level. But
I mean, I know NFL players. I just didn't know him.
You just didn't know him. Him and his brother have a podcast too. We should try to have a crossover.
I wonder if they would come on. Because I don't think he's got anything going on.
I don't think he does. I think he's pretty free right now. His brother plays for the Jets. And
wait, yeah, they'll certainly come on our podcast.
Is it the Jets or is it the Eagles? I can't ever remember who his brother plays for.
Might want to get that fact straight before we go on the podcast.
Hold on. No. Jason Kelce plays for.
Are you looking this up on the internet?
I'm looking it up right now. Why is it buried underneath here?
Do you want to know?
It's the Eagles. He plays for the Eagles. Okay. I knew it was green.
Did you know that on their Twitter they say the Georgia Eagles because they got so many of our players from Georgia? Like, it's like basically the whole of their defensive line and like some of their receivers as well. And so on their Twitter, they after the draft, they just changed because it was like an abnormal amount from one team. Like it was seven or eight people, and it was just like the Georgia Eagles. Here's a fun fact that you don't know.
Ooh.
My cousin by marriage played for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, how can we exploit that?
Well, I don't want to tell the whole story because that's digging up some skeletons.
Ooh,
but just know he's no longer my cousin-in-law, and he no longer plays for the Philadelphia Eagles.
So we can't, but is what you're saying.
I mean, probably not. It's a fun fact nonetheless.
That is a fun fact. You know what, though? Philadelphia Eagles fans are a level of intensity that I try not to interact with on a regular basis. So it's probably.
I just remember we were supposed to. Well, we did watch him on TV when he got, you know, whatever drafted. I don't know, whatever you call it. And whatever. Beethoven, get off my couch. he has gone. Wait, let me finish the story first. But they're like, do you put your Eagle stuff on? And I'm looking around. My whole house is just red and black, and I was like, with an occasional blue in there for the Braves. And I'm like, I don't have anything green. I was like, I do support the Celtics, but like that's
but
not,
like quietly.
But quietly, and also I don't. It's not the same as their green. Their green is like a little bit green. Like
there's a bit
aqua marine or something. And I was like, I don't know. And then I asked my dad. I was like, should we get some stuff? And he was like, oh, we'll see how this goes.
We'll give it a couple of years first. That's fantastic.
Because it was like my first cousin, so it was my aunt's daughter. He just was like low key. So the whole family had gathered, and he's just like, we'll see how it goes.
The closest I have to this kind of a story, because this is how we are, is we have to like, I have to relate to this story. I can't just let it go.
I mean, if you have a cousin who also is in the NFL, that's fine.
I don't have a cousin who is also in the NFL, but my nephew was in a movie.
Okay. So was I.
So my nephew was a cheerleader. He was one of those cheerleaders that like goes to Vegas for the big competition.
Oh yeah.
He went to the University of Louisville for cheerleading.
Hey, well done on that pronunciation.
Thank you. I worked Tiger. Really hard on it just for you. you should have seen the effort that it took me.
You made your mouth like star, like that arse star that
we're talking about. But he was in the movie Bring It On number 5.
Oh good lord. They made that many.
Christina Milian.
Oh, well, that's special. And was he like in the back? Did he get to talk at all? Or?
He didn't get to talk, but he was one of the like the cheerleaders, one of the main like actual cheerleaders in that movie. Yeah. So he has a lot of screen time, and he makes a lot of faces, but you don't actually get to hear him talk.
Oh,
But our whole family was so excited about it that we all purchased the DVD. And I rewatched it a couple of years ago, and it is a truly atrocious movie. And I would think so.
I mean, the first one was like cult classic.
Yeah.
And then, but like, why you get to five? It'd be like them making, well, they actually did Rocky Horror, which is my favorite cult classic. They made a Shock Treatment, which was a sequel.
And oh, I didn't know that.
Well, there's a reason. There's no amount of midnight showings.
Zero midnight showing for the second one.
Yeah. Sometimes if you have something that's like a Mean Girls or something like that, that's just like sort of a sleeper at the time, but then like becomes this like phenomenon, you got to just sort of let it be there.
You really need to know when to just let it be. Like, yeah. That was a great movie, and we're not going to ruin it with
five more.
Oh man, it was so bad. It has some pretty racist moments.
Oh, yes. Cool.
Next time I see you, I'll make you watch it. I'll bring it to
Beer. Okay.
Actually, I can't. It's in Phoenix, but I'll get it from at Christmas.
I'm sure
and I'll bring
we
it
can
up for
find Spirit. It on the 8,000 streaming services that Stuart has.
I'm sure. Tell Stuart to look it up. Stuart, look up this movie.
Stuart! Oh, wait, five. He's out with the ducks. Stuart, come back here and fix this for us. If you want to know what it's like to go on vacation with Christy and I, if Stuart happens to be there, it's just that.
It's what you it
is. Why doesn't this work? Get us a ride!
Help us find this.
Why are we so sunburned?
You know what my students told me today, which is gonna blow your mind.
I find that unlikely, but
they said that my class is very calm and that I have a very calm demeanor.
That's a lie. I mean, I have a lot of adjectives for you, Christy, but I don't know that calm comes to mind.
I was like, they were talking about another professor, and that one of them said that they want to be in the middle of that professor and me. And I was like, I don't understand what you're saying.
Like in a weird, sexy way?
No, like as a person, they want to fall somewhere.
Oh,
like the other professor they said is like, she's really funny and chaotic and she's kind of all over the place. And they were like, I want to be somewhere between her and you, like in the middle of that. And I was like, what are you saying right now? And the one said, you're not boring. And I was like, thank you.
Oh, well, thank you.
And then they said, your class is just very calm. And I was like, that is not accurate.
Well, it's probably because you have, I do know this from when I started teaching to where I ended up teaching. Is there is a level of confidence that you get. Like now. Also,
I think what they're just noticing is that I'm organized.
Yeah, exactly.
Which
and then you know what you're talking
you
about.
Don't know this about me, but I can organize things.
She's more organized than me. You hear this and you're like, Leah's the oldest child and sort of the cranky type A. Christy is the youngest child and free thinking and flowing.
Free spirited now.
Free spirit. But it's actually sometimes the opposite. She'll be like, what do you want to talk about? I'll be like, I don't know.
Let's figure it out while we're recording.
Let's let it ride. And Christy's like, let's not do that.
Let's at least come up with a thought. Well, hey, speaking of today, firstly, we decided to give this vermouth thing a second go.
We're gonna try it again because we got a lot of feelings.
We got a lot of feedback about how we had done it wrong.
No, we didn't do it wrong. Who said we did it right? It just was gross.
Felt like
We not give it the flair? It needed more flair.
It needed more flair, and apparently the measurements were off, or you really have to know how to make a Negroni. You can't just kind of wing it. Is one of them.
That was probably the first problem.
That was probably the first
problem. And the last problem. I looked on the internet and I saw something, but that's probably not right.
You know,
I also looked on the internet for this one too. So.
Well, I was going to say, it's not like we do a lot of research for these drinks. We're really just flying by the seat of our pants here. So.
I know. We probably should just be taking shots of gin at this
probably.
Stage.
But yeah, so we made martinis this time.
We're going to do martinis. We're going to have a redemption tour.
Gin and vermouth.
Mm-hmm.
And none of that Campari nonsense. So cheers. Are you ready? Do you have
your... No, I didn't make it yet. What the frick?
Go make your drink. Oh,
I'm sorry. I'm trying to get a little... Also, it said a little bit of a citrus thing, so I'm getting my citrus out.
Ooh, that's exciting.
I know. I'm really exciting. But also, it said... I will say about the classroom thing is that also, I sounded so crazy in those earphones last week. Why didn't you tell me? It was ridiculous.
You know what? You sounded better while we were doing it. And I listened back and I was like, oh no, that was terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible.
So really sorry, guys.
So sorry, guys, but you know, can't go back. There's some things you can't go back on.
We can't recreate like the moment.
Babies and podcasting. Can't go back. Roller coasters, babies, and podcasts. okay, so also we don't have the money to go back. So I saw that there was two parts gin, one part vermouth, right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, that's what the internet said anyway. So Christy, I'm going to make this and I'm going to tell you. I'm all decorated for Halloween.
I know, you did a good job. Yeah, we'll have to put pictures up of your house. Maybe disguising where you live just in case we have stalkers, but
I don't care. I have a big dog.
You do have a big dog.
I have an alarm system and a big dog. So if you make it and police grade mace. So if you make it past all that, congratulations.
Congratulations. You guys did a great job on your house. Mine is decorated, but not nearly to the extent. But that's also because I live in an apartment.
Yeah, and some people, I think you're more Christmas because you get the big
I am a little bit more Christmassy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have an extensive amount of Christmas decorations, only a few Halloween decorations. Do you decorate for anything else? Like Halloween and Christmas, but do you do any other holidays?
Do I decorate for any other holidays?
Yeah.
That's a great question. Let me think. I don't think so.
I don't either. I put out a couple of things around Easter. I have like this vintage Easter egg music box thing that it was my grandma's, I think. And that's the only thing I had for Easter. So I bought a couple of bunnies to sit next to it. But like, aww. That's it.
Also, I saw on the internet you're supposed to stir, not shake. Missed a bond.
Oh.
So I'm stirring. Bond is wrong.
I stirred it.
Yeah.
Because I was too lazy to get out the shaker. It was just.
Also, in my infinite research of about 30 minutes, I discovered that you are. The reason that you drink it out of the martini glasses is because this could be not true, guys. I read it on one website, so that's my referencing. because you're not supposed to get it warm from your face.
Oh, yeah. I know the types of glasses that you're supposed to use are so fascinating to me because it has so much to do with like body heat and not ruining aspects of the drink.
Like, I will say those people who are big into the cocktails that messaged us and said, we want to make you a Negroni. We are very grateful because we don't do that. It's not our thing.
Well, and also, you know what? We will give them another tribe made by somebody else.
Maybe pre-made.
Maybe a pre-made one again. We'll go to a bar. We'll ask them.
Oh, yeah. We'll ask a professional bartender to make it for us.
We'll have a bartender make it for us instead of us just randomly throwing things together.
That sounds like a plan. Okay. I've made my drink now.
Okay.
It's a lot of alcohol.
It is, again, a lot of alcohol.
What are you people who like these drinks? We have not had as fierce a response as per the Negroni from multiples.
So many people.
It's apparently, I think you guys are, our audience is into these strong drinks, I think.
Yeah. Well, it is our audience. It makes sense.
It is. And we love you. We love you for it. Yes. All right.
All right.
Here's... I'm a little nervous about this one.
Oh yeah, that's much better.
Yeah, it's really good. It burned my nose hairs when I went in. Did it do that for you?
There is it's like so much alcohol.
I'm gonna put more lime in it. I think. Or lemon rather.
Oh did you use the sweet vermouth again? Because I used the dry.
I did. Well, because I only have the sweet vermouth, but I saw how to make a sweet vermouth martini. And I have a maraschino cherry in mine. Oh. Which I think is exciting. I have always wanted to be a martini person. It just sounds classy. But I never really understood the olive thing. I was freaked out by the olive.
One thing I will say, audience members, that we can collectively say is we both don't like olives. So
olives are disgusting.
The olive thing may not happen on the show for that reason. I put more lime in it. Let me see.
Is it better this time? But yeah, I was excited about the sweet martini because it
has... Oh, it is better actually with
Good.
Yeah. I think it needs Oh God, the heartburn.
Yeah, it's gonna burn for a bit.
I feel uncomfortable.
We're gonna need to take some Pepsin later.
Oh gosh. My chest hurts. I wish you could see me. I'm just like clutching my chest.
Time my friend had scotch and she was like, why is it warm right here? And just kept pointing like to her esophagus.
Oh my God.
Oh, well.
Well, you and I both do that when we resolve ourselves that this is what's going to happen. We both just went, well, this is it. This is what's happening now. This is
life now.
That's
that PhD stubbornness coming out.
It's true. It's so true. It was such a teacher response. Well, that's us now.
Continue on.
Oh, this is going to go downhill so fast.
Oh, goodness. All right. So, Leah, tell us what we're talking about today.
Christy, okay. Can you tell me first who the number one team in the country is?
I can't. Because it went into my nose.
Oh no. Oh no. Is there anything left up there?
There's burning no hair.
Okay, I'm putting a sweater on because it's finally fall in North Carolina. Finally. Oh,
what is fall?
I don't know, Florida. I don't know.
No, Leah, because you know what? As much as I'm glad that it's Georgia and not another state. But
she says through pursed lips.
I don't feel like you guys were the best team last week.
We were, but I've explained many factors and you refuse to listen to them. You just keep saying that's why everyone hates the SEC and I can't help you with that.
I just don't agree with them. I don't.
I also didn't agree with them either, but I am going to accept it because if they put the Broncos number one, you wouldn't be like, you know what, guys? ethically, I don't believe
in that. I don't think this is the best way to understand.
You would be like, okay.
Absolutely. Yes. Every day, all day, I'd be like,
take the money and run. And
this is accurate. Yeah.
Pray for next week. So I saw. There was a couple things. One was that I was looking at a syllabus that was for when I first came into the university that I previously worked at. It was it's a historically Methodist school, but they cut ties a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a class called Spiritual Formation, and it was a gen ed class.
You couldn't even say it.
Spiritual Formation. I know. Well, you guys knew. Now here's the deal. Again, you've heard my thoughts on this. I think it's very practical, very systematic in one thing, and I admire people who teach it.
Yes.
However, to 18-year-old people of different traditions in a gen ed class, that's a tougher sell.
A tough sell, yeah.
So
you're not wrong.
So I looked at it, and I sort of – and it was stuff like my predecessor was one of those that was just like about to retire and just didn't care. And there was, it was like, light a candle and gather everyone around. And I'm like, I'm not sure we can have candles in class. But she didn't give no shit. Well, she was just like, tell me to go and I'll retire a year early. So well, I can't wait for that opportunity. But anyway,
so I'm going to be amazing in my late years.
Oh my gosh. I already feel like I'm there. You know, like you talked about your calm classroom. It's like when they walk in and they're like, do we really have to do this? I'm like, this is not a democracy.
This is a cheerocracy.
This is, I say I'm a benevolent dictator is what I tell them. I said, this isn't really up for discussion. So. but anyway, I'm going to get to this is already hitting me hard. Oh God.
It's strong.
So I changed it to spiritual practices of the world religions. And I messed with it to where we looked at different sort of categories that different world religions kind of shared. So things like sacred sites or sacred texts or, you know, mystics, you know, that kind of thing. So what we did was we looked at these categories and then we'd look at what different religions, how they explain them, basically, or, you know, whatever. One of the categories was pilgrimage. And then I was looking at that and then I saw another podcast that we are friends with and they were talking about some sort of journey. And I was like, that could be kind of fun to talk about the idea of pilgrimage. Yeah. Like, and because I think especially like when it starts to get fall, I start to think a lot more about Scotland. And I think Scotland was you and I's sort of, I don't think so much about it in the summer when I'm just sweating profusely. But once I put that long sleeve on, I'm like, oh, this is kind of cozy. And I think Scotland was kind of a pilgrimage for both of us in different ways. But I thought that would be a fun sort of topic to talk about.
I think, too, it's interesting the way that pilgrimage can mean different things to different people. Mm-hmm. And how, especially depending on your tradition, the kinds of pilgrimages that you could go on or you know, things that are more officially recognized as pilgrimages versus something a bit more, you know, personal understanding of pilgrimage. Because I think with growing up in evangelical circles, there was always this kind of idea that if you were going to go on a pilgrimage, it was going to be to Jerusalem. And this idea that we have to go and like see where Jesus walked or something. And to be completely honest, I've just never been interested in doing that. That wasn't something that ever, like, not that I'm like, I don't want to go there. I'll go anywhere.
You heard it here first, listeners. If you want to fund our traveling to the wine country,
send me wherever. I you know, I'll do it. It's great, but like it's just not been one of those places that's been like a call. You know, like there's places that kind of call to you. And the amount of guilt that I felt for that, especially when I was in seminary. Because people would talk about it a lot, like, oh, wouldn't it be amazing? And there are always seminary trips to Israel or sometimes Greece, which was a little bit more appealing to me, but for entirely wrong reasons. I just wanted to go for the Greek mythology and like all of the, like Greek stuff. I didn't really want to go on the like Paul journey.
You didn't want to go to all of the churches that are basically stone ruins and Corinth and all of those.
No, places. I'm like, take me to the temples, like
God of wine. What is
Bacchus?
Bacchus. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I want to go there. Yeah, like I went the first time I went to Athens and I went to the Parthenon. I cried. It was very kind but it was because of, you know, like connections that I have to Greek mythology, not overtly religious ones. And so, but like,
and then someone punched her in the face.
Yes. Well, something that, and then we, there was a, And then there was a man who took a rock. Oh my God. He got in so much trouble. He like picked up a rock and this lady immediately was like, put that down. You're going to be arrested. So FYI, do not try to take a rock from
a just park. A rock off the ground or like yep. a rock off the thing.
It was like off the ground and it probably was like, well, I don't know. I wasn't close enough to see it. So I don't know what kind of rock it was, but I mean, just
did don't she think that they were going to, they're going to put it back together.
It makes sense. You can't keep taking pieces of ancient stuff. If we all try to take it, it'd be gone, you know, but like,
well, oh, I, but the I probably like
got it immediately. It was like, oh man.
I feel like, cause when I went to Germany, they were getting on to people for selling pieces of the Berlin Wall. And I was just like, guys, it's torn down. You're gonna put it back together? I don't
know. That one feels okay. We can go ahead and let that one
be. Well, I bought a piece of it.
I think my brother has a piece of it too. So
thank you for affirming me. But also, but, I mean, like, take a chunk for like history and for like the museums. But like, I mean,
I've always felt a kind of the sense of guilt about not wanting to go on this kind of official pilgrimage to Jerusalem. But as you know, as I've kind of been farther into my studies and stuff, I realized that my pilgrimages weren't ever going to be to Jerusalem, but that's not where it is for me and for you too. Like how we understand those.
Yeah. And some of the like background, I guess, on at least religious pilgrimages. And just again, to clarify, pilgrimages are usually where one leaves. I'm trying to make a very generalized definition. I'm not looking at anything. So where one leaves the safety of one's comfort and ventures out into somewhere new in order to pursue some sort of spiritual, spirituality, I guess. I mean, yeah. Spiritual awakening or spiritual fulfillment or, you know, maybe just to learn a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some education there too, because I did do the Jerusalem thing.
Yes, you did.
But mine was really more about, I don't think I had some sort of spiritual awakening, like, oh my gosh, Jesus was here or anything like that. I think mine was more when I read the text or someone talks about the text, I can see the places in my head.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Like I like that.
Absolutely.
It's like, it gives it more, it's grounded a little bit for this little baby practical theologian. It makes me happy. But we had a thing and y'all maybe had it at, you went to Denver Seminary, right?
I did. Yep.
Yeah. And it was called METS, Middle Eastern Travel Seminar. I don't know if y'all had it, but basically it was the guy who owns the Coca-Cola bottling company. And he basically like funded for many, many years, seminary students to be able to go with across the different seminaries. And it was, you know, select seminaries, but they were pretty elite seminaries, I would say. Luckily, I was based out of Atlanta, so. Which is the home of Coca-Cola. So that was helpful, but
I'm pretty sure this sounds vaguely familiar. Again, I didn't do it, so I don't know if it
you
is.
Had to like try not try out. That makes it sound like you gotta like sing. You had to
like apply.
You had to apply for it, and then you got interviewed by people, and they would. Yeah, it was intense, and then because it was free. You paid for everything. You paid for nothing, not a single thing. If you didn't, I mean, you could if you wanted to buy something, but like you could go there and have spent no money if you wanted to. And so I went in 2005, I think was my year, and I applied. And they basically, it's sort of like theology, the real world, if you were 90%, because they essentially like put you in groups. The idea I think was to try to get people from different seminaries to talk to each other. So you have people from like Harvard Seminary and Princeton Seminary, and Mercer and Emory I think got a bye because we were in Atlanta, and then you had Southern Seminary, so it was like the Southern Baptist,
which is located in Louisville.
indeed, indeed, it is, Christy. So yeah, so I didn't know if Denver was one of those participants, but yeah, we went to Israel, Palestine, Syria. We flew into Damascus, which is kind of nuts, and Jordan, Lebanon, Greece, Egypt.
Okay,
and we went with two. The people who were leading us were archaeologists. They were professors of archaeology. Mm-hmm. So they were from Harvard and somewhere else. I can't remember. but Harvard.
There's that guy at Dallas Theological Seminary that's kind of big into the archaeological aspects, I think. I can't think of his name at the moment. But
it wasn't like archaeology, like Jesus really did.
No, it was like
sleep underneath this tree or something. Like it was like, here's where something stood. Or like when we went to Palestine, they were like, hey, look, we're in Jericho. And then someone was like, hey, there's that wall. And they were like, yeah. And the student was like, that's not supposed to be there. It's supposed to be gone.
I do remember in seminary when I took an Old Testament class, my professor was very kind of specifically focusing on the different archaeology to help us to ground the text and to have more context in it and to understand a bit better what we were talking about, what we were seeing. And it was super, super helpful. And so I totally understand that concept of going and experiencing all of that. And again, it's not that I would like refuse to go if I was presented the opportunity. But in light of like,
yes, you would. You'd be like, I'm not going. I'm
just absolutely not. but in a kind of more of like what you were saying, this idea of leaving and going to do something that kind of connects the spiritual aspects of your faith or your journey or what have you. Israel was just never the thing that was that for me, but I felt like it was much more something I discovered when I was in the UK, Scotland in particular, but also with Ireland, and that there was a kind of spiritual experience of moving around and experiencing these places that had this history and this very different understanding of what it meant to be Christian. So that I was kind of breaking out of that very specifically American evangelical worldview, experiencing all of this different aspects, but also like just there's a presence, a historical presence that you get when you're walking around these places that I felt like was one of those kind of pilgrimage ideas for me. Like, I remember having that the first time I went to Ireland, just walking around and feeling like you're seeing these ancient castles. I don't know whose castle that is. I have no connection to that castle, but like,
it's St. Patrick.
It's St. Patrick. They're all about St. Patrick. but like, to think about, there have been people here for ages. Or I think too about my friend and I went to see Stonehenge. One time, and Stonehenge is so much cooler than I expected it to be. I really thought it was going to be a tourist trap, and it is not. It is so amazing.
It's too far out to be a tourist trap.
It really is.
You have to get on like a bus, don't you?
You have to take a bus. Yeah. But we did one of those bus tours. It's like a small bus tour, which I'm obsessed with in general, bus tours. But these bus tours, they would do a few different stops. And the one we did that day went to Stonehenge. And then we went to a second stone circle in Avebury. And the Avebury stone circle was much less well preserved. And you can actually walk up and touch the stones and like walk around them and stuff instead of it being kind of roped off like it is at Stonehenge.
Mm-hmm.
And there were very few people. We went early enough in the day that both Stonehenge and Avebury were both kind of like empty. And so it was just the people on our bus tour and it was a small bus. So it was like at maximum 10 people. And we were walking around in Avebury and my friend and I were both commenting on how it was like you could almost feel a different difference in the air. Like there was, because there have been people doing different kinds of worship in this place for thousands of years. Mm. And there's just some kind of sense of that connection when you're walking around it. Mind you, her husband, who is very Bartian, disagrees with us entirely.
He's like the destroyer of joy.
He was like, no, there are no ghosts. And I was like, not ghosts, but like...
You get a reverence doesn't mean there's ghosts just floating around everywhere. And then you touched it and you both got zapped to the 1500s and met handsome Scottish man.
Incredibly handsome Sam Heughan, who I have met briefly, but he in Glasgow, because you know they film just near there, and he lives in Glasgow, and I was in Ashton Lane, and he was walking by, and I gave him the weirdest look because I could like vaguely recognize him, but he wasn't all dressed up like Jamie. And so I was just like,
I would think that's not his go-to.
I was like, who is this man? Why does he look so familiar? So I was like staring at him like that. And then he just smirked at me and like nodded and kept going. And right after he passed me, I was like, oh no.
I know. I did that with Scott from Frightened Rabbit in Glasgow as well. If you guys know Frightened Rabbit, they're one of my favorite bands. And I was with our friend Meg, our mutual friend Meg. And we were eating at the same place. And keep in mind, this is not like John Lennon. Like, this is just, you know, it's
right. He's not like wildly famous. Yeah.
Not even a little bit. Like, I'd be surprised if someone here knew. But, like, you know, he was across the room and I had met him before at like a fundraiser. And I swear I lost everything that I had inside of me. Like, I just. Talk about a spiritual experience. I saw that man and I must have just stared at him. And Meg was like, you've already met him. Just go. I bought him a drink. I was the last time. And she was like, you just go talk to him. And I was like, it is not that simple. I mean, we were in like a cafe, Chris.
This is how I felt.
It was not that like crowded. And at some stage, I think he saw that I was staring at him and he like looked back at me and was just like friendly stare. Yeah. Like not even a smirk. It was just like, oh, you're like a generally unweird looking 30 something.
Right.
Like you can come talk to me. And I was just like, oh God, I can't do it. I can't do it.
I had two very brief interactions with Nate Roos, who was the lead singer of Fun and The Format, my favorite band. And he is same. They were small little venues. He wasn't like wildly famous at the time. I have a picture with him. But like, it was like I left my body, like my soul left my body and I could not function. And my best friend Jen was like far more functional, which is not how our relationship usually goes.
That's amazing.
She was like, I'm gonna ask him for a picture, and I was like,
and they have a picture, and there is a picture that is probably one of Christy's sacred objects. She's gonna want to be buried with that picture. We'll put it up on the internet.
We will. Yeah,
I don't have a picture with Scott Hutchinson because
you
I never went up there. To him, and the first time I didn't take a picture because it was kind of pre that era. Yeah. You didn't really. I think I had like one of those fake Blackberries.
with Nate is on a digital camera. Like we had to have that picture for us.
And I imagine too that it took so long because like now you can just sort of snap it, but you can't.
I know you had to like pose and he was like obviously like trying to go up and sing.
And there you're like no,
coming out a picture, but you know.
That's actually a good point though, because Christy and I both share an intense love for music. We have different tastes.
Mm-hmm. There's some overlap.
There's some overlap. There's some very distinct branches to our music tastes. As you'll see at Beer Camp, FYI, coming up soon. Beer Camp.
Yes. 2 weeks till Beer Camp.
Yeah. I've got my karaoke song ready, but have you had a concert that you would consider kind of a pilgrimage, that you went somewhere kind of maybe outside your normal realm and had some sort of experience?
Yes, I would say I have. And I would say that it's actually not infrequent. I think that there are two things where I can tell that like these two aspects of life tap into that kind of spirituality for me more than other things. One is obviously literature, which is why I wanted to do it with theology, but the other is concerts. One of the best ones is actually I went in Glasgow. I went by myself because no one would go with me to see Beyonce and Jay-Z at York. And
it totally was icons in themselves. So
yeah, and it was an amazing concert. It was mind-blowing. It was one of the best concerts I've ever been to. But also, like, the act of getting there and then the act of getting home were both very intense experiences.
I'm sure. Was it at the Armadillo?
No, it was at Hampton Park. Park, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's not easily accessible.
No.
And because it's a concert, and also, if you don't know this about the UK, the buses shut down really early. The UK has a curfew, apparently, and that curfew is earlier than I wish it was. Yeah. They were supposed to have a couple of late buses for the concert, but it ended up not working out. And so I didn't have any service in the stadium, and I didn't have any service for probably 10 minutes walking out of it. So I was having a hard time remembering how to get back to the bus I needed, and I couldn't use my GPS. So I was kind of wandering, like following crowds. And by the way, this martini is literally making my nose run because it's so strong. If I'm sniffing,
it's I have to take like little sips periodically while you're talking that I don't die.
Yeah, I'm like, there's part of me dying right now. But I kind of followed the crowd. I ended up having to walk through Govan like after midnight by myself.
Which is not a great part of Glasgow.
It's not a great part of Glasgow. And
hope they were worth it.
So it was one of those times where you're having this experience and then you have to get home and it's hard and scary. Honestly, it was really scary. And there are moments of like, if I die this way.
Yeah.
Is it okay? Am I okay with this being my final thing?
And you're like, well, yeah.
I was like, yeah, you know, at least I'm going out on a high note. What about you?
I think mine would be I had a big one where I was very ecstatic and also went on a journey to London to see Taylor Swift because Stuart got me tickets and surprised me. And that was the big thing. Whatever, we're gonna shelf that. this was a different one. So you'll know if you read my little survey that Neutral Milk Hotel is my favorite band. They are from Athens, Georgia. They came out with two albums of particular length, on Avery Island, something about Avery Island was the first one. I didn't really get that into that one, but then In the Airplane Over the Sea, which a lot of people say is one of the greatest albums of all time. I would also agree with that.
A lot of people say that, yeah.
A lot of people do. Frightened Rabbit, actually, Scott had the cover tattooed on his arm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. But they were one of the things. You sound like you're dying. You sound like you're dying. It's so bad. Christy, I have made no dent in this drink. I stick my tongue in it.
It's
sometimes.
Not bad. It's just it's not it's so strong.
Bad.
It's it, like drinking lighter fuel.
It truly is. I feel like I'm on an episode of Mad Men and that I'm in that I need a cigarette and I don't
Mad
even
Men makes
smoke.
So much more sense right now.
I know. They were wasted. They're like, cigarettes are fine.
Cigarettes are fine. Because our insides are on fire.
Yeah, they're like, oh, cigarettes kill your lungs. Well, look at my stomach contents right now. I'm literally just touching it with my tongue periodically and hoping that some transfer will be made because it's a lot. So one of the things that happened with Neutral Milk Hotel, as the mythology goes, is that the lead singer had pretty severe mental health issues and basically made this album that everyone was like, oh my gosh, and then just faded out. So this is the myth. I don't know if it's confirmed or not, but they said he was like working at a Krispy Kreme in like Athens, Georgia. But Athens, he's from Georgia, from that area. And so is Michael Stipe, who is from REM fame, who was getting together a group of people. He had Dinosaur Jr., if you know them, they were from Athens. It was like this collective that he was coming. And he was basically like, where is this guy that made this album that some people say is maybe the greatest album of all time? And they're like, oh, he's up at the old Krispy Kreme over there if you want to go. And so as the tale goes, he went in and got him. And so one of the things that was cool about this is that, well, it was important, I should say. Cool is probably not the right word. Important for me was he came, they toured the UK, and they came to Manchester and to Edinburgh. And I remember that was like relatively close to me at the time. I was living in Edinburgh. And I was like, if I don't see him now, I don't know how much longer he's going to be able to keep doing this just for his own health. Like, you know, like I don't know where he's at, because like he made that album and then poof, he was gone.
Right.
That was it for years and years and years. I mean, that was the 90s, and I saw them in like 2000 and like probably like 15. So from that time period, I mean, they probably did stuff here and there, but like, this was like a proper tour. So I went to Manchester, England, and he was playing in a church, and it was an old church that had been made into a venue. And Stuart, my husband, and I went, and Stuart didn't know any of their songs. But I mean, it's not hard. There's only like two main albums, so you can learn them pretty fast. But they played, and there's like eight of them or nine of them in the band, but they played, and there was probably only, I would say, maybe 70 or 80 people in the venue at most, maybe less than that. But people looked like they were having a religious experience.
Yeah.
Like it was hand on the hearts, like singing. It was, you know, you and I always teach about things that are religious that are not maybe conventionally religious, and people debate about that. And they're like, well, God's not really, or, you know, it's not really religion because, you know, sports can't be, blah. And that's fine. I don't mind that sort of debate. I think it's interesting. But this legit felt like we were in heaven or something. Like it was like people were putting their hands up in the air. Like we were at some sort of like, well, evangelical thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's such an interesting conversation too, because I know that there's a lot of kind of pushback on how music can manipulate you into these spiritual experiences. But I also feel like it's not necessarily always manipulation. I think sometimes music and art in general can tap into a part of us that just talking or reading books or whatever doesn't necessarily do. And so, yeah, you go to the concerts and sometimes it's just hitting in those right ways. And it does. It like elevates this spiritual side of life and emotions. And,
well, and it's why the psychology of religion exists. Like, I mean, you know, that these sort of things that hit our brains in certain ways, they look at that. And I'm with you. I don't necessarily think it is manipulation. I think it's just like anything else. You know, when I drink a Gatorade, it hits my brain and suddenly I feel like I can live again. You know, so I think it's one of those things that we do it every, you know, if I drink coffee, all of a sudden I feel like life is not gonna suck as bad as
life is not so terrible. We can manage. Yeah,
we can do this, right? I put my tongue on this martini and I regret all of my choices in my brain. So I think that one of the things is that the psychology people, the science and religion people look is, yeah, these things, but, you know, they've been singing, we've been singing and dancing in religions from the beginning, indigenous, yep. you know, religions it's use that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been right. part of it. And so I think, you know, if it does, if it's one of those things that sort of helps, I think it's, you know, well, I
it's
certainly.
A, yeah. It's a come full circle too, I think, because like we're talking about pilgrimages in general and like how do we figure out ways to experience a more spiritual or tap into those elements of kind of spirituality that is going to be different from what we do in just our day-to-day lives, you know? And sometimes that requires us to leave and go and like do those walks, you know, in Spain or to go to a significant place. And sometimes it just means that we go experience a concert or an event of some kind that's also hitting those, it's all the same concept. You're trying to connect more mm-hmm. into this thing, and you're doing it by doing a thing that's outside of your day-to-day
yeah. activity. And that's why I do like the spiritual formation classes. I say it's not my specialty, but I still enjoy them because I like yeah. the idea that there is like the psychology elements to it, like closing your eyes. Like, what uh-huh. is it about closing your eyes? What is it about hearing a song, you know? And it is, or going out on a journey.
Yeah.
You
know, or smells, like lighting a candle or having right. incense or whatever. How does that?
I think it's to get you out of yourself for yeah. a minute and just like shock you out of your own sort of, I know when I'm watching a show or something that's going to hit me, one, because I pause it a million times to tell Stuart the religion stuff behind it, but also it was a long journey to get through Star Wars. Let me tell you, but
we're so fun to watch movies with.
I love it too. That's when yeah. you and I are friends, but come to find out, people who are not into it don't think that that's quite as fun to stop it every 5 seconds. So, but I mean, yeah, like that kind of thing. And I will say, in terms of the actual pilgrimages, like, yes, you talked about Jerusalem, which is a big pilgrimage site for Christians and Jews. You've got the Wailing Wall and the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is where Jesus was, again, supposedly crucified. There's one of the things that kind of annoyed me is that everywhere that I went, it felt like in my brain that was sacred to Christians, they had put a church on top of it.
Yeah.
Just like stuck a church, like Mount of Olives, just stuck church. A church on it. Bethlehem, stuck a church. Although I will say, if you go to Bethlehem and you go in that church, they have Christmas decorations. It's kind of awesome, actually. Amazing. Yeah. But one of the churches that I didn't mind, I mean, I don't mind churches in general, but it just was like, it, you know, you build a building on these places, but like, was the, again, I talked about this, the Garden of Gethsemane. And I think the reason that it hit me different than some of the other places that I went, I mean, Bethlehem was amazing. They're like, this is maybe where Jesus was born.
Right.
And it's like a stone thing. And it's like, okay, maybe so. But anyway, but for me, this, the archaeologists were like, this garden has been here for like a long time.
Right.
Like, and it's always been called Gethsemane.
Yeah.
Is it the real one? Yeah, we don't know, but you know, it's probably a firm bet that it's, because it's just this little park.
Right.
With these trees. And, but there's a church right beside it because, you know, they can't put the church on top of the trees. So there is one adjacent to the trees. And, but it, you walk in and it's dead quiet and it's dark.
Oh, okay.
And if you look out the windows, all the stained glass are the trees that are very like kind of spindly looking, almost like Halloween trees.
Yeah.
That's all the stained glass. And there's like a single candle like lit. And then there are people in there praying and stuff, and you can go in and there's services, I'm sure. But like on the day to day, it's just completely dark.
Yeah.
And it was just really like moody, I think. And it was one of those stories that I had in my head. You know, when you heard Bible stories growing up, I think I was always particularly fascinated by the Garden of Gethsemane because the idea that you've got these people who've watched you do all these miracles and, like, you know, you're having a bit of a rough time. You haven't really asked much from them except to kind of go on your journey with you. But, like, and all you say is, can you please stay awake?
And then they all fall asleep.
And they all fall asleep. And I had this.
Why?
Right? Yeah. And I'm just like, could not one of you, like, there's like 12 of you. Like, right.
Take shifts.
Take shifts. Plan this out. It's our it's our brother's last night. Like, come on. So I think in my head, especially when I was a teenager, I had like this vision of what that garden looked like, and it matched it.
Oh, interesting.
It was the only thing that kind of matched it.
Yeah.
And then when I went in that church, it was just so like solemn. Uh-huh. And dark, and the stained glass, and you could see the trees from the park, from the garden, coming through too. And it was very creepy. But I really liked that part of that
that's
journey.
Really cool. Yeah. I just think there's something to be said about going to places that have had this kind of spiritual significance for a long time. Because I think that even if we're not saying like there's actual spirits present or something, like there's still I hate to use this word, I feel like it's been ruined by the youth, but there's a vibe.
Well, you're just embracing it now, it's fine.
There's a vibe that's going on in that, like, the earth holds on to what's been happening in that spot for so long.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you can feel it, you know, you can kind of tune into it in a way. And it does remind us to get out of some of the rational stuff, I think, especially for those of us who operate a little bit more out of our brains than our hearts.
That would be me.
Same. Yeah. you know, and we have to have like explanations, or everything needs to be rationally understood or whatever. And to have ways to be able to let go of that and say that, like, for instance,
Are those your children?
Those are can you hear them? They're so loud. Yeah. They're just children outside playing. And Penny is like,
she's about to go off.
She's like, I'm holding her, but she's like aware.
The trigger has been set.
But she, you know, like Heather Walton says, sometimes like I'm not going to get this right, but that sometimes we have wounds that don't need words, that needs like silence or needs explaining. In different ways, the ways that we can understand stuff without having just like a list of facts, you know, and that comes in through these kind of situations, this kind of experiencing of what's being held in a place or a song or a smell or whatever, the tapping into those other senses that we don't always give credit to. And I think it's important we remember to do that stuff.
Yeah, and I think Catholics are far better at it.
Like, yeah, the higher churches do a good job of it.
Yeah, because they do the more experiential stuff anyway in their services. Protestants, I think, we're taught to sort of keep quiet, just listen. unless you're in a Pentecostal sort of
you know,
whatever church.
I mean, there's a reason they call them the frozen chosen, right? Like,
I mean, and I think, but I think I carry that with me in a way because I'm actually really, it's why I talk about spirituality a lot, and I want to really emphasize that I don't want to be disparaging about it. I talk about it the way that someone talks about the Loch Ness Monster. It's like something I'm deeply interested in.
You don't really.
I don't understand it, and I don't know what it looks like or sometimes what it's supposed to be, but like, I believe it's real. But yep. I can't teach you about it because I don't get it.
Yeah.
But like,
Nessie is real. We just haven't seen her. It's fine.
That's fine. That's right. But for a practical theologian, that's rough because it's assumed that that's kind of what you do because it's very human condition, you know, ish. And so I do like the things that manage to tap into me, and they're usually related to some sort of nostalgia, like, or something that brings to life this sort of, like you said, on the pages, like, thing that I learned way back in the day. And I really, and you know, I want to emphasize too, other religions, I mean, if you're talking about Islam specifically, has Mecca, you know, which is so foundational.
Yeah.
To, I mean, it's one of their pillars is that if you are able, you are to visit Mecca. Yeah. And you know, that we don't really have that.
I know. Like, and I think,
like people are like, yeah, we'll go to Jerusalem, but it's not like foundational.
It's not foundational. It's not required. It's not like you're supposed to do this thing. I think too, this is an interesting thing I've seen. And I don't know. I know that there's been kind of some amount of study of done it of people who switch from lower church into higher church.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason is that they're drawn to these rituals and the kind of experiential nature of it. And I went when I was in Scotland, when I lived in Glasgow, I went to a Scottish Episcopalian church that was so, it wasn't like the highest church in the world, but it was pretty up there. Incense and, you know, a ton of ritual. We also at Easter would fire a glitter cannon and a portrait of the Virgin Mary. So
what? You would fire it at her?
Yeah, they had a glitter cannon at the end of the service. They would fire the glitter cannon at Mary.
That seems rude considering like what she's been through.
It was so great. But yeah, it's that kind of longing, I think, that we have that's unfortunately been ignored in parts of Christianity because of this hyper-individualized nature that Protestant Christianity tends to take on. So we can't tell you too many things to do because it's not about doing things, it's about believing. But like, you should still do things, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's the Protestant anti-Catholic sort of push that we see in the Reformation was like, we don't need the buildings. We don't need any. Yeah. And it's just like, okay, like you just threw the baby out with the bathwater. The bread. Why can't we have some of it? You know?
Yeah. Like find a happy middle ground between me and the more fun professor, I guess.
Right. it was all head and no real heart. And I think the pilgrimages give you, you know, no matter where your pilgrimage is, I felt kind of like with Stuart when we went to, because we did the Star Cruiser at Disney, R.I.P.
That felt
like a pilgrimage in a way, because like when he walked in, he looked around and was like, it was like watching a child's dreams materialize, and kind of like my Gethsemane, actually.
Yeah.
If you want to connect it to that. In a secular way, is that it was like all of his imagination that he had watching it was like in front of him.
Can you imagine if we got to go to the golf course that Hurley built in Lost? Like,
no, yeah. Is that, can we? Is that real?
I don't know if it's still there, but it used to be. You used to be able to go visit it. And like, can you imagine? You and I would just like,
we would not play golf, but
we would be like, oh my God.
We wouldn't leave, I don't think.
We wouldn't.
They really missed a trick doing they could have done like a whole theme park.
They really could have.
Yeah. Do you have any places that you want to visit that you think would be like on your pilgrimage?
I do. It's kind of a difficult one to do because it would involve some pre-planning research, but my mom's grandparent, I mean, not that none of these would also, but
no, I know, but not that we're not able to do the research.
I know it might be a thing that we are good at, right. Research. My mom's grandparents moved to the U.S. from what was at the time, Bohemia became Czechoslovakia and is now the Czech Republic. And I've always wanted to be able to go back and see like where they were from, not just like go to Prague or something, but actually go to their towns. Because it's like my dad's family, like a lot of the US, like we came over for so long ago and kind of just, you know, mixed and whatnot. So there's not an actual.
Are you okay?
Like, I know my nose is just pouring.
I'm like deeply interested in your story, but you also sound like you're drowning.
I sound terrible. You guys, this, I'm not sick. I don't have any allergy. I was fine until this drink. And
he's
now
he's allergic to martinis.
You should see me. It's terrible. I'm like trying to hold it together as I'm just like dripping. It's a good thing we're not on video.
Just visualize. Visualize the drip.
Yeah, it's the only kind of like ancestral place for my family that could be visited, you know? Like there's lots of story and passed down family ideas about the Whaleys, but like my mom's family actually came from a place, you know, recently enough that I could go back. And I've always felt like that would be such a great experience. I meant to do it while I was over there because it would have been so much easier if I was starting in Glasgow. But unfortunately, COVID ruined all sorts of plans.
Right.
But yeah. Where do you want to go?
Mine's kind of sad. I was thinking about it as you're talking. I've been to a lot of places.
Yeah.
not to brag.
Yeah. I know. A lot of my boxes are already checked, but.
A lot. And that's a blessing. About my students oftentimes ask me, like, how is that? And I'm like, is it? I'm a religion professor. Like, how'd you go to India? Because they asked me because I was a religion professor.
Right. So
major in religion. There you go.
Yeah. You get to do this.
So yeah. How'd you go to the Middle East? Because I was a religion major.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think for me, it would be, again, hitting that nostalgia button. My great grandparents were native peoples in the line. Uh-huh. And I don't talk too much about them because, again, it really starts. Elizabeth Warren really freaking. She really ruined it. And, but also, people are like, oh, my cousin. It's like me saying my cousin was played for the Philadelphia Eagles.
But to be fair, you're also registered.
I am indeed. But I put white on things. Like I'm not trying to get jobs or anything on that. Cause I don't see myself as a part of that group.
Right.
But I wish I was. Cause
but you are a little bit closer than Elizabeth Warren is.
I assume so. But my great grandparents built this log cabin up on Lookout Mountain. That's in Georgia. And because of just family dynamics. If I'd had two martinis, you guys would be hearing it all. I don't have access to that cabin, but it was also a part of a big farm. And uh-huh. I kind of grew up there. And it's where, so one of the cool things I remember about my great-grandfather is he had these little dolls that his mom had given them, and they were dressed up like native peoples. Uh-huh. And but they were tiny. They're like the size of like your index finger. He used to carry them around with him, and I remember he would show them to me, and just like little things, just very, very, the whole thing experience was just very nostalgic, and my cousins and everything up there. And I would love to one day have a ability to go back up to that cabin, because my great-grandfather was a carpenter, actually, and so he built it himself. So that whole thing would be amazing. And I'll tell you all about it at beer camp. But it's the same thing that happens. It's like the Hatfields and the McCoys, basically. It's not like no one murdered anybody or anything, though, I should say. So it's not quite like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, well, just dynamics. So, but I would love to be able to go back, because I feel like it would be. My grandfather told me there was a tree in the middle of a field, and he was like, one day my great-grandfather, and he said, I'm going to build you a house under that tree.
Oh.
We were riding on a tractor, and I was
so sweet.
Yeah. So I would love.
My great-grandparents never learned how to speak English, so my interactions with them were really just, like, trading food.
I mean, sometimes that's the best.
But yeah, I mean, it's the same kind of, like, I want that connection to the heritage, you know, like there's something about connecting back to your family that I think is also part of it.
I think so. I think, and because we're Americans, like, I know very, very little about my family. Like, I know, for instance, my grandma's name was Mary Elizabeth Francisco. That was her name. And I'm like, okay, somebody was something back in there, you know. But I mean, she was the Southern lady from Georgia. Yeah. Like, I mean, and she never gave me any information about that. So, I mean, so I need to do one of those ancestry things, I think, just to get, well, I mean,
My oldest niece, the one who is apparently now a Kansas City fan and a traitor, is also really, has done
long live the Swifties,
quite a bit of research on the Whaleys, and she has a lot of information. We do have, I will say, and I will make it over to this one. This is pretty easy, but there's a Whaley Abbey in England.
Oh,
And apparently it is, one of our ancestors that, was there. And so, like, there's that kind of stuff that she's found out, but it just, it feels a little bit more like distance, you know? Like the way the Abbey is not like, it doesn't, that doesn't like call to my heart in the same way that being able to possibly go see where my great grandparents were from.
Right. You know? And that's, and I don't want to go to like some like Cherokee, North Carolina or something and be like, hello. Like, I want,
right.
They'll be like, okay, you're very white. And I'll be like,
there's this very specific experience that you want to have.
And I think like that cabin for me was just like, it's family, I guess. Yeah. And family, I think family for both of us is very important.
It is.
So I think that's this, but I do want to, learn a little bit more about the background because I really, you know, I was talking to Stuart and he was like, I'm Scottish. My mom's English. My dad's Scottish.
Easy for them.
That's it. And I'm like, okay, cool. But I think for you, your name is Whaley. My name is Robinson.
I know.
I gave up because I remember one time someone was like, the reason I do sometimes mention my great grandparents is not because of the native thing, although it is cool. It's that it's the only one I know about.
Yeah.
Like all these different branches of people. Like I have no idea. Like one of my granddads was Baxter. I'm assuming that that's Scottish, but like I don't know because the Baxter
it's not.
The Baxter soup is the only thing I know. Maybe I'm a millionaire heir to the Baxter Soup Company.
Oh my gosh, I hope so.
That would be amazing. But yeah, so it'd be really
have an inheritance coming to you soon.
One can hope. One can hope. All right. Well, I think we've reached our point.
Also, I have to go get another tissue.
Oh no. Bless your heart. I think my cat's at my door trying to Salem started to try to figure out how to open doors. And it's starting to be concerning.
It is.
he's tall.
I'm going to lose Penny to the children pretty soon here. She's going to start barking at them. But but yeah, well, guys, let us know in the comments where you want to take a pilgrimage to or if you have. Because
it may be more interesting than North Georgia mountains.
Never.
Quite possibly.
I'm going to try to eat this cherry too. I might die.
Good luck. Godspeed. All right. Bye, y'all.
Bye.